Welcome back to Shooting Lot Rats. I'm Daniel.
I'm done.
And I want to do something a little different today. I want to introduce our audio editor. Now he's not here, and I'm about tempted to invite him into the studio, but Joey Aguilera, he's our audio editor. He's a literal hepcat. He basically backed me into a corner and made me talk. He's toured with this a ska band called the Hepcats. He's also been a member of the band 6 Feet Deep. And just getting to know him, I think he's pretty awesome.
All right, guys. Gonna have to measure drapes by rings. And now for the news. Moving on. All right, guys. Adventure Seed Monday had a bit of I like this one. Mission type is to destroy an enemy base. Terrain is agrarian or a farm world. Complication is bad weather. Opposition is the underworld or a criminal cartel. And there is a special hazard this week of a competent imperial.
Now, did you see, people like our buddy James Spawn would say that there's no such thing as a competent imperial.
He would, but we know that James is off.
Yeah, he's also rebel scum.
He's rebel scum. Yeah, I'm sorry, I gotta get my movie voice on that one.
Yes, he's rebel scum.
All right, guys. Well, there was a couple of people that had thrown out some suggestions for that. We get those every once in a while where people actually give us feedback. I know, it's crazy, but it does happen. Mike Freely tossed out that the cartel has a vested interest because it's their independent shipping company, in quotation marks, that distributes the vile goods.
Or vile bad.
Exactly. Chris Crumble had jumped in there and suggested that genetically engineered crops that cause mutations in particular alien species or aliens not of a particular species.
Oh, no, that's just nasty. That sounds like something the Empire would do.
Yeah, and that's like Gooder English, too. I didn't even read that before I copied and pasted that in there. So, Chris Campbell, love you, brother. And Brett Pazinski, who had chimed in, even though he's still working on his Westworld adventure and some other stuff, and actually is quite busy in real life, when last I spoke to him, jumped in and said, suggested bad weather can be a tremor in the Force. And I found this very interesting way of interpreting the outcome. And I liked it because it's something I do myself, but I don't think I've ever addressed it with people. Basically, it comes out as just being a perfect example of not being literal, but using the suggestions as just that. To basically think outside the box and be creative. You know, looking at bad weather as a tremor in the Force. Just kind of like, you know, being a little more creative. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Character 57 is Duer Nast. Is a larger-than-life sentient living in the now. He is not a callous sort, but he does not think about his actions or how they will affect the future. Think kind of like maybe sort of Han Solo-ish. He worries only about the now. That being the case, he is often seen as reckless and hedonistic, think Gene Simmons. Surprisingly, he is strongly devoted to his friends and has a highly developed sense of what is right. Okay, not Gene Simmons anymore. This does not include following the law, though, as he will break it readily. When it comes to people, Duer is almost as quick to offer his help, not always thinking of the consequences. This can get him into quite a bit of trouble, and he has run afoul of both the Empire, local crime lords, and thugs alike. So just kind of like a impulse control issue kind of person.
Reminds me a lot of Rito.
Rito? I feel badly. You didn't think of me right off the bat when you saw that?
Oh, well, I mean...
Impulse control? Hello?
By proxy, I thought you.
Okay. Rumor 57. I heard the mud font of Gear was planning on defecting and offering the use of a TIE fighter manufacturing plant as a bargaining chip for political power. Hey, I'm going to let you throw this one in there. Kyrul Hijum threw up a suggestion.
Of course, the problem with this is that the Mudfawn's sister, the flat noose of Gure, is married to the manufacturing plant itself. Get this, she's married to the plant. Using an ancient bureaucratic marriage loophole, Gure, and the Mudfawn is absolutely terrified of the flat noose.
That's right. We went Dr. Seuss on you this week. No, I actually like that. And you know, I was throwing around some when I came up with this rumor. What I wanted to do was sort of like exemplify that there are different titles and roles, and they don't necessarily equate to, you know, dukes and nobles and, you know, traditional sounding titles that we have. And so that's kind of the reason I kind of threw those out there. And I really didn't have any idea, you know, what the titles really were in reference to or anything like that. I was just being creative. So anyway, moving on. Planet 57, which would be Naru, is a terrestrial planet with a standard gravity. It has a Type 2 atmosphere, which does suggest that you wear a breath mask. You can get sort of ill or not feel too terribly great. I mean, it's not going to be, you're not going to die of the atmosphere. It has a moist hydrosphere, which basically means that it's 86 to 95% liquid covered. And it does have a temperature ranging from minus 23 to 84, so it's actually a pretty nice place. There are only two major land masses, and it has thousands of smaller islands. It has an incredibly diverse ecosystem with a large number of amphibian species. Now, it is home to only 80 people who started a colony 50 years previously. The government is still run by the families, and it has an industrial tech level, but a limited service starport. So when you see that, you kind of think about when you come in there to land your ship, either no one is helping you land your ship, or there's going to be a guy down there with like two flashlights like bringing you in. It's true. Now, the Naruians are excellent swimmers and seamen. They have a deep affinity and respect for the planet. One of their group seems to be able to predict weather patterns and movements of animals, almost like a shaman kind of thing. So, I mean, that's what we got for this Thursday, Planet 57, Naru.
My character of the week was nobody, because I'm still off taking care of other projects. Number one of which is the magazine. Now, we picked up a lot of fans recently because I managed to finally get an episode of the podcast out on Reddit. And
yay!
This has sparked a lot of interest. In the 90s, West End Games released a series of magazines called the Adventure Journal. And each journal had short stories. They had articles about the system, sometimes even character profiles, locations as well. And that's what we're going to try and bring back with Wild Space Magazine.
Yep, I actually got to see the skeleton version of that. I think it was last night. Ty had posted it up. Looking quite good. I was really impressed. Unfortunately, people, I will not have one in this one. Perhaps after the first of the year, I'll actually be back in the saddle on the creative end of things. But hey, it was looking real good. I was like really, really surprised.
So was I. And the thing about the Wild Space Magazine is this is something, of course, that is fueled by the fans. So you're listening to what I'm saying here, and you've got an idea. Whether it's an adventure, whether it's a story you want to tell, whether it's a character that you just want other people to see, send it to us. ShootingWantRats@gmail.com.
Exactly. Or, you know, if you don't actually have an adventure or something like that that you have that you want to share or anything like that, you know what? Even alien races, vehicles, creatures, if you want to tell an interesting story of an adventure that you were in or had planned on or been a part of in some way, and you just want to share the basic outlines of it and let somebody else kind of like run with it, by all means, let us know. If there's something you'd like to see as a serial, or if you'd like to see a cartoon, or stuff of that nature, or if there's just something that you just don't think is, you know, you can't find it and you want it, let us know.
Serial. The first thing that went through my head was, where's the milk?
Where's the milk?
Of course, man. It's time for the buffet.
The buffet. Give me that blue milk. All right, Daniel. I think I told you about this. The Old Republic sourcebook actually is going to be, it's being listed as Galaxy Guide 16 is in the works. You get a chance to look at that?
I am reading over our review copy of it now, and we're going to, in the next episode, we're going to have a full-on review of this. And let me tell you, folks, just, and this is unfinished, but it is awesome. This is the level of quality that we're seeing now, you know, that the re-up team has finished. It looks like everybody else is stepping up their game.
Yeah, and I tell you what, I was absolutely floored at the resource, at this book. It has so much in it, and it's just so well laid out, and I have nothing bad to say about it at all. Art's good, layout's good, it's clean, it's well written thus far, it's well organized, just wow. So we'll talk about that more, but for you who are interested, go ahead and check it out. It's up in the Ranker Pit forums, and I don't believe that we've put a link up in the G+ community, but if someone wants that, we certainly can do it.
Don, what goes into a good scout or explorer campaign?
Whew. You know, I've been kicking this around all weekend, trying to figure it out. And I was like, well, you know what? There is the Galaxy Guide Scouts. You definitely need that. That is a great book. So basically, you need planets to explore, new areas to be. You have to be very creative. I mean, you need to create new civilizations and new tech or lost tech, stuff of that nature. I guess the two things that come up readily for me are the original Star Trek is a really good example of that. Then I get to thinking, well, you know, as in for written material beyond just Galaxy Guide Scouts, what would I suggest? And whenever I think of a space-based explorer game, I always think of the old Traveler system.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And that had a lot of really interesting information for doing exactly that. There are so many different things that you can do of an explorer campaign. I mean, I guess for me, What's the important thing to go in there? Like Strange New Worlds, you know, Bold the Goal where no person has gone before, you know, that sort of thing. How about you?
A few things about a scout campaign. One is the unknown. You've got, if you're going to center your campaign about people scouting out planets, the unknown. They don't need to know what they're going to hit until they're on the surface. Two, this is an opportunity to bring out those creatures that not many people mess with. Whether it's you create some new ones or that they find the usual thing on the planet. It doesn't have to be new. If you package it right, it's going to be new to them. There's planetary, ecosystems, environments. You know, everybody expects to go down on a planet and not have to worry about environment gear. Well, put them on their head. They can't even get out of the ship unless they're wearing gear. And if that gear is damaged, say, by the teeth of a creature, they've got to deal with that. To me, it's all about the new.
Definitely. And I tell you, I think one of the themes that you don't see a lot of in role-playing, at least not as a main theme, is man versus nature. And that can be, you know, in a number of varieties, but basically it breaks down to, you know, man versus space or man versus, you know, planetary environment. You know, it's a good opportunity to do a lot of different things. All right, well, a suggestion I have anyway is, well, I mean, something you can do is like a plot from the movie Jeremiah Johnson, which starred Robert Redford in 1972. I'm not sure if anybody is familiar with it, but basically a brief breakdown of what the movie is about is a mountain man, all right, an explorer, who wishes to live his life of a hermit. He becomes the unwilling object of a long vendetta with with Indians, and proves to be a match for their warriors in one-on-one combat on the early frontier. So basically what happens is he's gotten into this feud with this Indian tribe, and what they do is some of their braves, to prove their manhood or you know, how much courage they have, will seek him out for one-on-one combat. And this lasts for years and years and years. And that I always thought would be kind of an interesting serial to enter into a campaign. But anyhow, I mean, it's just an idea, you know, good or bad. Mostly good, because I came up with it. I'm just saying.
For all we know, Don always makes great ideas.
I make great ideas. Just add water. So anyway, that's really about it. I mean, I don't know. That is really a hard question.
It's because it's such an underused type of campaign.
Yep. I don't think I've ever actually run a scout-based campaign in Star Wars. Though I think something I might do is I might have a variety or a different kind of scout campaign. Say it's set during the New Republic, and the person is hired and working for the New Republic, and what their job to do is to make contact with a number of systems that they haven't heard from since either the days of the Empire, or who have stopped communicating with the New Republic government. And find out what's kind of going on. I kind of like that idea.
I like that idea.
All righty. Well, anyways, ready to move on? Are you?
Money for nothing and your checks for free.
Uh-oh, it's some dire straits, people.
What's the appropriate price for using skills to earn money?
That's right, the band that only had one good song.
I want my
So anyway, what's the appropriate use for using skills to earn money? I think that this seems to sort of be sort of a holdover from people that play a lot of Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that, where they feel as though they have to have a steady income for their characters. Got to build that castle keep, got to get those henchmen and stuff like that. And it doesn't really... no one ever talks about money in the movies other than, you know, well, there's a bounty on this and a bounty on that. And so it's just kind of assumed that everybody has funds available to them in one way or another to buy the things that they want, or they have access to them. And I sort of write my adventures that way as well. do you do something like that? Well, keep in mind, does have any of the main characters in any of the movies ever had like a job? Does Luke really have a job? I mean, after, you know, Uncle and Aunt Beru, you know, get barbecued, you know, little Szechuan there. Does he ever really have a job? No, not really. And
he was given a commission in the rebellion. Yeah, he was a commander.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, it was one of those things where, but I mean, you know, is it like a traditional job? Do you see Luke sitting around doing paperwork in an office and making sure other people are doing their jobs?
Do I see him rolling a bunch of six-siders to see how much he gets for doing it?
Exactly. So anyway, quick and dirty for a person who wants to do that. Well, if you want to give your characters and say that they have a job that generates money, and in fact, you know what, now that I think about it, I think this person specifically was speaking about a person in their group that was playing a lot of Sabbath. Mm-hmm. All right, I think, and I've had this conversation many times. Basically, as a game master, what I would do is I would handle this. Okay, at the beginning of the adventure, you say, okay, look, you know what, you've had some downtime in between adventures. Tell me how aggressively you're playing in that interim. And okay, and how much money are you willing to put up while you're doing this? And if he says, well, I'm willing to wager up 500 credits over the next, you know, this interim. And I'd be like, okay, and how aggressively are you playing? Are you playing, you know, pretty tight? You're playing moderate? You're playing pretty loose? And then I would say, okay, roll one time. And then I'd just, you know, depending upon how well he rolls, like, I mean, if it's a moderate one, you know, double his money. If it's if he makes a very difficult, you know, you might want to triple it. You know, just that sort of thing. And then just kind of go that way. Just keep it loose and easy. I mean, it doesn't have to be detailed. Just saying.
I think that works, too. Just a simple, how much you're willing to risk. Let's throw some dice together. Oh, you didn't win. Or you ended up having to give your shirt. Will you take a loan from the nice gentleman in the cheap suit?
Exactly. But I'm also keeping in mind this. I mean... when characters approach you and say, look, you know what? I want to have a job. That's fine. That's dandy. Okay, that's you have a job. But what's going to happen when your character goes, oh, you know, I have to stop what I'm doing as a job and now go off an adventure? Unless you own your own business, your boss is going to take a pretty dim look at that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not only that, it's kind of like, you know, will you going off on adventuring affect the amount of money that you make, you know, at your regular job? I would think certainly it would. I don't know. These are all things the Game Master has to take into consideration. I personally think it is too much paperwork. I would say, here you go. You're on retainer. You get 800 credits a month, plus room and board. Have a nice day.
Well, you could work it another way too. The Shadowrun has a system in place where it's a lifestyle actually. And the characters have to make a choice. The better their lifestyle, the more they have to pay. Therefore, they have to do things in order to keep their lifestyle. Now, it can apply to Star Wars. After all, these characters have to do something to finance certain things. They want that droid. They got to pay for it. How are they going to pay for it? They certainly can't just walk up and either try to steal a droid or, you know, things like that without drawing further attention and further adventure hooks. Ships. If they've got a ship, most of the time they did not afford to buy that outright. And there's a caveat attached to that ship. They got to make a payment on it. They don't make a payment on it, either the intergalactic repo guy is showing up or the nice, nasty traditions are going to show up to break some knees.
Yep. Think Repo Men, the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Give us the ship.
There is a Z95 AF4 that's been statted. The stats are going to be put up on the blog post for this episode. The thing that really caught me about this design is the fact that it has S-foils.
Yeah.
I've never seen a Z95 with S-foils.
Well, I do believe that he was saying this is the last production model of the Z95 series. And, of course, it was the precursor of the X-Wing. And, I mean, I guess evolution-wise, it makes sense. But you're right, the S-foils kind of threw me off. Other than that, the stats are solid, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'm trying to remember, where did they come up with the... Where was the idea for this? I'm trying to remember. Wasn't it... Out of a comic book?
He mentions it being in a comic book, but the image they use is so much like the image that was released of J.J. Abrams on the set of Star Wars Episode 7 with a starfighter that looked just like it. And people are questioning if it's a headhunter or an X-Wing.
Did I hear correctly that preliminary shooting is done?
Yeah, it's done.
Is that crazy or what?
As a matter of fact, Friday, they're premiering the trailer.
Oh, that's... What? I thought they weren't going to premiere that until the Super Bowl.
Mm-mm. Friday.
This Friday, huh? Have to check that out.
88-second trailer.
That's huge.
All right, now for The Way of the Force, where Don and I discuss a book. In this case, this is a little different. We're going to talk about the introductory adventure set.
Box set. Well, let's start off with what's in this box set. Mm-hmm. All right. The first thing starts out with an undersized or, you know, paperback size player's booklet, which basically begins teaching the rules very simply. Now, if I remember correctly, this is a first edition product, is it not?
No, it is not, as a matter of fact. It's a revised and expanded.
All right, I couldn't remember, because I know the rules are sort of dummied down.
It was published in March of 97.
Yep, all right, a year basically before they closed doors. All right, a player's booklet. It also comes with 14 character sheets, and basically, you know, front and back ones, their punch-out cards. Comes off a narrator booklet, the adventure booklet. It comes out with 64 punch-out cards, which basically kind of denote stuff like characters, tech, force powers, and so on and so forth, as well as having some stand-up characters. It also does come with, I do believe it's like 6-7 maps, and it comes with like 6 really, really small dice. And the cover actually is heralds back to the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, there is a physical description. Try and pronunciate that one again. Description. Of the product.
Something about the adventure game, it's also like those classic, but I said classic. What I really mean is it's like a box set today. It's not really the game. It's just a taste, and then once you get a hit of that crack, and you're over in the corner shaking, I gotta have more, gotta have more, gotta have more, and they start handing out the book and say, you gotta give us some more money, you can have this.
Yes, you too can get a bigger rock.
As a matter of fact, even in the mechanics, the notable difference from the full system is that there are skills that are combined. Instead of melee, combat and melee parry, they combined it into one simple term, melee.
Yep, which always led me to think that maybe they were going to go that direction anyway.
The book itself... all of them, actually, are very simple, but the adventure section of it, it works a lot like a choose-your-own-adventure book. What it does is it sets out a scenario, and you give the player certain choices, and depending on what they choose to do, you go to another scenario.
Yep, and I also really liked it. I mean, the scenes that they have set are actually, I mean, they're kind of nice and contained. They're a decent amount of information and decent amount of stuff going on that it makes for an enjoyable evening. I mean, is it going to be a 6 or 8 hour epic session? No, it's not. But it is going to be enjoyable, and it does hit a lot of different rules. That's the other thing they do. They have the scene set up so that it pretty much uses different portions of the rules, and the story is actually not bad as well. But what I really liked was that at the end of the adventure, or I'm sorry, the scene or the whatever, it has a breakdown of what would have happened, when they ran it, where they say, well, you know, we have these characters and they did this and stuff like that. So I mean, it's chock full of examples.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really good. I mean, and you know, quite honestly, I mean, I read through this adventure this weekend. It's been a long time since I did that. It's a pretty decent adventure. It's not bad at all.
No.
And like it says, it's a good introduction to the system.
It's very introductory. It handholds the GM as well as the players. So it's great if you've got a group of people who haven't played the system or so new that they don't feel comfortable being a GM. They got a chance to just work together. One of you pick out a GM who runs the adventure, the rest of you play. Now, it'll even, you can even take it to the next level and run the adventure 1 week, come back with a new GM and run the adventure again, seeing what you can do different.
I hadn't even thought of that. That's a spiffy idea.
Yeah, it's in like Don just mentioned, it's also a great place for veteran GMs to look over and use something like Edon 2 for ideas.
One of the things I remember when I was first getting back into role-playing a little over a year ago, after a huge hiatus, the GM was going to run this adventure. But anyhow, the GM had something come up, and he had to leave. Now, he ran, I think, one adventure, and he had had me set up as a co-GM. So what I decided to do was to just run a side adventure in between the scenes. And that is something else that this, you know, introductory adventure really does, or introductory adventure game. It is set up in a way that if you want to expand and add additional scenes or sidetracks or something like that, it's very easy to inject those into the format. So, I mean, it's it is a great place to start.
And I think that both Don and I can agree that this is something most players and GMs need to take a look at.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's really the level of success with it. I would put it up there with Keep on the Borderlands for Basic Dungeons and Dragons for its longevity, as well as its just its ability to be expanded, how good it is as an introduction, and just how well it just does what it needs to do, which is get you started. So go out there and hurry up and rush out and buy one. I think I got up on eBay the other night, took a look at the price on them. I think you can buy them for like $50. I know.
And I'll be linking up a less expensive version.
Yeah. Attention, Fantasy Flight Games. This is Daniel.
All right, Don, what kind of movie of the week you got?
I picked the movie Soldier from 1998 with Kurt Russell.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's about a soldier that's dumped on a waste disposal planet, and he lives among a small community there of crash survivors, and he takes it upon himself to defend his new home when the new generation of genetically engineered soldiers, the one that replaced him, are ordered to eliminate the crash survivors.
Liked it. I'm going with an old classic, Silent Running, Bruce Dern.
I remember that because it was just like, oh my God, this is so boring. And then I was like, well, that's exactly the point. It's supposed to emulate how much time this person has,
mm-hmm.
you know, because he's running and he's keeping silent and he's keeping away from people. And just the mental end of it is just oh, it's so tiring.
So a guy who's placed in charge of essentially an orbiting greenhouse is ordered to destroy it. The government has decided they're no longer useful. They're going to go with another program. Well, yep. He flips out. He kills the other people that are aboard the greenhouse, takes off. He heads to areas unknown. And this whole movie consists of him and his three robot companions who help him tend the greenhouse. And I think that would be a pretty good kind of a dystopian type of adventure. Your players are on board this. You could even make it like a deserted Ithorian herd ship.
Yep. I would make it so that the characters discover it, you know, mm-hmm. discover that person on there.
Oh, yeah, that would be even better. He starts stalking them.
I like it. Turns out to be a Transdotion gardener that turns into a, you know, a tracking badass. I'm just saying, I mean, we're going to keep with the Hollywood theme. I mean, let's put improbable things in there, so.
Oh, absolutely.
Or even better, a flipped-out Wookiee.
Ooh.
A flipped-out tracking Wookiee who's in charge of the ship, who's been on a run because it's got a bunch of whole Akashic trees and stuff like that and creatures on it. So it'd be like I'm a miniature Kashyyyk.
I like it.
Oh, I like it too. I see something in the future for a new issue of Wild Space Magazine.
That's right, man. In closing, folks, if you've got something, an idea, a comment, a question, anything, shooting womp rats, all one word at Reddit. A lot of you have been giving us a great feedback there. Twitter, SWD6 Podcast. You can email us at shootingwomprats@gmail.com. And lastly, we do have a subreddit. It's SWD6. I don't have anybody to really keep up with it. So once again, I'm putting word out. If somebody wants to help volunteer, the only thing you really got to do is babysit it. And if, I don't have a better word for it. You go in, you look, make sure nobody's causing trouble. And because I'll be going in there to putting in information. And if you've got stuff you want to put in, that's great too. So yep. Essentially a community manager.
Question for you. Where have you been? Where did you put the podcast up on Reddit?
The RPG subreddit.
Ah, there you go. Yep. I tell you what, you know it'd be exciting? You know, with Christmas and Thanksgiving and stuff like that coming up, if we could have all of our 20 listeners, like, send us an email and go, yeah, we're here.
Yeah, make it a Christmas gift to us, guys. That's all we want for Christmas, is you to send us word that you're listening.
I would like that. I mean, I don't even want a long dissertation on, hey, you know, I really liked episode 15 and this and blah, blah, blah. Not even that. If you just touch base and go, hey, guys, I'm listening. Peace out. I'd be happy. I'd be so happy. I'd be like, someone contacted us. Yes, they did. Oh, my God. Yes, I can't wait to do the next episode. Yes, I did.
So, on behalf of Shooting Womp Rats, I'm Daniel.
I'm Donald.
May the Force be with you.
Take care.